Okay, so let's dive right into the first episode. And I decided to call this episode Poldark. Because when I thought about what I wanted my first subject to be, there really was nothing greater than my very favorite series, Poldark. And if you're not familiar with this, I'm hoping to turn you. And if you are familiar with it, then congratulations on your great taste. I really want to pique your interest first, so I'm going to set the scene, and then we'll go into detail about it. So let's imagine it's beautiful Cornwall, England. It's the coast. Picture the most amazing, picturesque ocean crashing on the rocks on the shore, and there are cliffs, and you're just looking over every bit of it. There's clouds. It's beautiful, and there's like the most beautiful kind of fast-paced, haunting piano melody playing. One of my favorite series openings ever. When I talk about fast-forwarding through, you know, that I never ever skip the intro. So it starts off there, and you see a man clearly wearing somewhat of like a naval uniform. It looks kind of like it's only his silhouette. He's looking out over these like cliffs into the sunset. He's on the beach. He has returned from the Revolutionary War. Obviously, he was an English officer. Actually, he became a captain. And he had been over in, I want to say it was Virginia. He comes home to find his family home in tatters. His father has died. He doesn't know what's going to become of his inheritance. He misses his love, Elizabeth, who's beautiful and just embodies all that is gentry and was supposed to wait for him, and he's got her ring on his finger. There's no actual like engagement, but without so many words, you know, they had planned on getting married when he returned. Everyone thinks he's dead. He comes home to find that she is actually engaged to his cousin by walking into his uncle's home, thinking it's somewhat of a welcome home party, and it's an engagement party, and everyone's kind of in shock. So he literally has to start all over from scratch. And just because he had a kind of like a noble family, he's considered a gentleman. He hates it, but still, he's not afraid of work. He's never been the type to want to live in a grand home. So he's really having to just, like I said, start from the bottom. And he has enemies, but he's a really good man. And then there's, of course, another love story that comes into play. There's a little bit of politics, a little bit of action, a lot of love, a lot of jealousy. And it is really a 1700s soap opera. That's really what it is. It's an amazing, amazing period drama. So, if that sounds interesting to you, then let's talk a little bit more about it. And I can't tell you how excited I am. I have, let's name drop a little bit here. I've got my friend Ashley, who I'm hoping to make a guest one of these days on an episode. And she loves Poldark as well. We have a few things in common. I have a few friends who watch the same shows that I do, and I can discuss those with them. But unfortunately, 90% of people, it seems like, at least like here in the States, don't know what some of these things are. So what I do is I add myself online to some of their groups, you know, their pages, and I love being able to discuss the episodes or the book, you know, comparing the books to the shows in these groups. Sometimes people can get a little heated, though, if you want to add yourself to one of those, because I don't know if it's just my taste in things, but it seems like everything that I become super involved in has like a cult following. You know, it's like it's a little bit secretive, and then once you find out about it, you realize that there's so many fans that you didn't know about. It's like everybody's closet period drama lovers. But like I said, it's massive in the UK. In fact, it has actually launched Aidan Turner into like superstardom in the UK. Let's talk about Aidan Turner for a minute, because it also might intrigue you. He is really my new favorite actor, probably of all time. He is gorgeous. My husband's gonna hate this, but he knows I am in love with him and his character. So I started finding him on other shows. I will talk later on some of the other shows that I like that I decide to make an episode about. My other favorite, used to be my favorite, I guess you'd say that he's in second or third place now. I'll talk about Colin O'Donoghue, but now Aidan Turner is an Irish born actor. You may know him as Keeley from the Hobbit and movies, and he was kind of known as like the handsome dwarf who falls in love with the elf. So I had like a newfound appreciation after I fell in love with Poldark for Aidan, and the more I watched him, the more I just simply like fell in love with him and his character. And I mean, of course, when I first saw the first episode, I thought, oh yeah, he's handsome. But you know, when you really feel like you get to know somebody by watching these plots and their mannerisms and everything just kind of play out, you just are in awe of them. So if you also fall in love with him, he's got his own fan pages on Facebook, and he's got some other shows that I like to watch. One is Being Human, which he actually stopped working on whenever he started doing The Hobbit. And there's a few other things that he's in. They're not my favorite, but while we're on the subject of Aidan, I don't want to do an entire like episode on him. He's in a few movies. He's in an Agatha Christie mystery. You can find all those things, like I said, on I don't want to say BBC for sure, but definitely Amazon Prime and PBS Masterpiece, which I unfortunately don't pay for PBS Masterpiece because I've already got so many different things. There's also Acorn TV. That is a really great like UK streaming service if you love all of the British shows. So you can probably find it there. So I want you to imagine these dark curls that kind of come down to his ears, about the bottom of his ears, and these dark eyes, and just a little bit, just the faintest 5 o'clock shadow. He also has a scar, not the actor, but the character, Ross. And the scar is from the war, and it comes down right from above his eye to the middle of his cheek. And he has this amazing ability to just stare and look like the hero of anything. And I mean, it makes total sense. In this story, he truly is a one-man army. So if you get into it, you'll see what I am talking about. He's really just a force all his own. He's a really good man, but he can be selfish. He does make mistakes sometimes. I think that sometimes he can be a little bit too rash. I think he doesn't always think things through. What is the word really that I'm thinking about? He just kind of jumps into things. He's really more of like an emotion-based person. And I can appreciate that kind of passion throughout the show, of course. But it also really hurts me whenever he makes mistakes on the show because you love him so much, and then you see him do something, you're like, oh no, like, Ross, like, what are you doing? So, enough on that. Let's talk about the beginning. So, this is how I found this show. I had just recently came home from the hospital with my son, Wallace. I was recovering, and I needed to find something that I could do, you know, while I'm laying in bed recovering and taking care of this newborn all of the time. Sometimes I was up early, sometimes I was up late, and I had actually heard of this show because I'm a big nerd and I like to search through and try to find new period dramas that don't bore me to death. And I had seen it and I had read it, and the funny thing is I used to think that the 1700s was so boring, and it was always my least favorite time period, and that cannot be further from the truth now, which is just so, I just find so comical. But I, reading it, you wouldn't think that it sounds that interesting, but I'm telling you that it is. Take my word for it. But I read it, and you know what it was about. I thought, oh, okay, it's supposed to be really big, like, over in England, and it wasn't available, so I was like, okay, I guess I can't try it. Well, I found myself awake early one morning working on photos because I'm a photographer, and I was only working on my son's newborn photos because obviously I wasn't really working on anyone else's right when I had a son. So I was up very early. The baby was still asleep. I just thought, oh, wow, this, like, never happens. You know, I'm awake before him, and he can sleep through a hurricane. He was sleeping in my room at the time, which is what really surprised me, that I did not wake him. I got up. I made breakfast. I started working. I get on my laptop, and I turn on Amazon Prime, and I see the show, and I thought, oh, this is that show that I had read about. And I thought, well, why not? Let's just put it on and try it. Not really thinking too much was going to come of it. By the end of the first episode, I thought, this is intriguing. And that's kind of my clue. Am I going to like this show? I really have to give myself like 2 episodes to try to get into the story. And if I can't after 2 episodes, then I can't do it. I'm not going to do it. By the end of the second episode, I was like, oh, this is really good. So by the end of the day, by the time that my husband returns home, I am just fully invested in this show. I'm not going to say that I was able to watch it all day, but I had watched a good few episodes, and I was just like, wow. You know, so I'd found a new favorite show. So then, at night, I do my nightly routine. You know, the children are asleep. I get the baby ready beside me in the bed. My husband, he's staying up for a little while. I go lay down with the baby and I start my show. And it became like a ritual. Each night, I had to watch Poldark. And I would lay in bed and he would lay down and kind of see little bits and pieces of it, but it's really hard for me to get my husband into a show. Like, it happens. I'm not going to go into a tangent about Outlander because that's a whole nother episode, but I did finally get him into that. And I kept telling him, you would like it if you would watch it. You know, it's got war and politics and action and, it's, you know, all these amazing men, and I just really feel like you would appreciate all of its qualities. So anyhow, I'm watching it every single night, and I just become completely consumed by this show. And when I tell you that the final months in our old home, because we actually moved when my son was, I don't know, maybe like 5 months old, I was consumed completely by this show. I watched the entire 4 season. I realize some people can watch that in a week. I cannot. I have children and duties, and so I finished all 4 seasons because it was like all I wanted to watch most of the time at night. Only if I could truly pay attention to it. I don't know if you guys are this way, but if it's something I really love and I need to pay attention to it, I cannot be interrupted. I can't think about anything else. Everyone needs to be like asleep or in bed or just out of my hair, and I cannot be distracted because, as I said, I'm just engulfed in this show. It quickly becomes my favorite show, and I want to know kind of if you guys, you can send me voice messages, but let me know if you get like this about something. I love finding something that truly just evokes this emotion in me. I become obsessed. I find a passion for it. It just creates this like joy, like an inner joy that I can't explain. And I'm like, thank God that I found something that I can take like solace in. You know, it's a good feeling to be that passionate about something, you know, and it really starts to become a part of like who you are. So that's kind of my backstory on this show and how I found it. And the last thing that I'm going to say about that is when we moved into our new home, I can explicitly remember we had this like big TV, brand new, like 60 something inch television in our bedroom before we had moved it into our living room and mounted it above our stone fireplace. And my husband worked out of town a lot. And I remember watching the fifth season, because when I concluded the fourth season, it happened to be in the break between the fourth season and the fifth season. And I just simply had to wait until fall for the UK. I'm not going to say how, but I had kind of a secret weapon, a way to watch the fifth season that was highly anticipated during the UK premiere, rather than have to wait until it came to the States. So it premieres in the fall, and I watched it. And I think most people feel like when they love a show that much and it's so built up, they tend to maybe not always like the fifth season. I will say that I'm not going to tell you that you're not going to enjoy the fifth season. It's just that, and I don't know if I should wait until the end to talk about this, but these books, they're kind of complicated the way that they did the series. They stopped after, I want to say it was the seventh book that had concluded, and I'm not sure what the name of that book, like which one it was, but I think it was book seven through season four that they had finished. And there is a 10-year time jump that Winston Graham, the author, does in the books, and they didn't want to age them too much. And I know that they did this with Outlander, so again, not to like name drop them again, but I wish that they had decided to continue, because I thought if Outlander can do this, then surely Poldark can too. But they did not want to age them in the show. It's possible, it's just kind of difficult. So what they did was they kind of made up what they thought the writers, you know, in the show happened in this 10-year time jump. And that's what the fifth season was about. And I mean, they change everyone's hair, you know, like in every show, every season, they always want to change everybody's hair. I don't know why. And I hated Ross's hair, but they were trying to make him look obviously a little bit older, because that by that point, I know they were at least in their 40s. Probably supposed to be getting close to their 50s. I'm not. I could be wrong on that. Okay. So, let's kind of go back to the beginning that I touched on earlier. So, you have got Ross. And the show really starts out with the beautiful scenery that I was talking about. And it's kind of known for that. And it pops up every now and then on the show. And I think that's kind of what part of what makes the show unique, because they take a moment every now and then to kind of show this beautiful landscape, and it really takes on like a character of its own, like a heart of its own, or a soul of its own. The area, the location, really is its own character, and without it, the show, I believe, would not be. Like, it would cease to be. Everything about it. It really embodies Poldark to me. So, also, fun fact, Cornwall, after the series premiered, had like a 70% increase in people vacationing there and visiting and wanting to see the sights. So that's good for Cornwall. Another fun fact, Cornwall used to be called Cornwallum. And like I said, I'm a nerd, so I like to know these things. You will find that if you watch other period dramas, that even though Lord knows they're not all historically accurate all the time, especially certain ones, some of them are, or they try to be at least, I love watching these shows, whether it's on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon Prime or whatever, and they'll all be related somehow. You know, if you're watching The Tudors or Medici, you'll find that, oh, this character came from this family, and then this show is about this family, and then they'll start talking about, maybe it was the same place, but it was from a different time, a few hundred years earlier. And I love finding out what the names of countries used to be, or certain areas used to be, years and years and years ago. I mean, yeah, just centuries ago. In England, you know, so when I find out, okay, this used to be Gaul, this, you know, was what this was called before it was Great Britain, and when people talk, oh, they're in Westeros, and then somewhere else, I pronounced that right. I might be thinking of something different. My mind runs really fast, if you can't tell. That might be something from Game of Thrones. I might be getting confused here. But I just love finding out what those names used to be. And what, oh, this area used to be this before it became Ireland or Scotland. Or this area in England. They're traveling here in this show. And they're also there in this show. So, anyways, where's Westeros from? Is that from The Last Kingdom? I don't know. That's another show that's good, but it's not my favorite. But if you need, and like, ideas, because a lot of people I noticed on these groups will say, what do I do in between seasons? You know, I miss the show so much. I need something good to watch. And a lot of people will suggest The Last Kingdom. But I will say, nothing has been able to compare anything that I try to Poldark or Outlander. And what he calls the heart, but anyways, we're not gonna discuss those now. So done with our fun facts, because who knows if the next thing that I say I get wrong, because I got confused on my last fun fact. So I think I'm right. I believe I'm correct. But so anyways, Ross, he comes home, and I know I've said that like 5 times, but I digress really badly. And his uncle, he decides to go visit him first, and he walks into this party, and he sees his love, Elizabeth, and she's beautiful, and she's shocked to see him, because as I said, everyone believes him dead. And he's like, oh, you know, this is a great celebration. She says, we should speak right away. And he's so happy, and he's like, yes, you're right, because in his mind he thinks she's gonna say, you know, let's get right back on track with our engagement, let's get married right away. But when they go to speak, she tells him that she's in love, or well, she's marrying his cousin Francis. Francis is, he isn't terrible, he's not as handsome traditionally, I guess, as Ross. You know, he has his faults. He is very lacking in confidence. So, of course, he's heartbroken. And later on, she kind of waits for Ross to come for her, to come and just demand her attention back, and just, you know, no, you must be with me. You have to be with me. And so she hears, you know, when they say, Mr. Poldark is here to see you, and her heart, you can just tell that her heart leaps and she's smiling. She turns around and it's her fiance. It is Francis instead of Ross. So I'm kind of jumping ahead a little bit because that's within the days following. So he leaves immediately from his uncle's home. He goes to, I guess, what you'd call like his ancestral land and finds his father's property, and he's heartbroken again. He really kind of gets like another slap in the face because he finds out that his father has died, and his father's servants are there. Prudy, who is a really good character on the show, and her husband, they are just completely kind of dirt covered. I want to say like squatting. I hate that word, but they're basically squatting in his home. The place is a complete wreck. You know, none of the chores are being done, and even outside, everything is just really in disarray. So they're shocked to see him, and I will say that he doesn't have any kind of mercy on them. He just kind of like wakes them up. He's like, how dare you? All you do is you've been drinking nothing but port. If you don't know what port is, it's wine. And I love little port glasses and I have my own. So they do. They're always drunk. In the beginning, I would say probably Prudy is not like your favorite character, but she really becomes kind of from annoying to someone that you like, probably by the end of the first season. So he kind of like doesn't know what to do. He thinks about leaving. His uncle even almost kind of tries to bribe him. He's like, hey, let me give you some money. You can go get on, you know, the ship. There's nothing for you here, boy. And he thinks about it. And that's just tugging tail and running is just not Ross Poldark's MO. So he really finds it in himself to, he just decides he's gonna stay, and he has nothing left to lose. He just wants to get his home back in order, start from scratch. He is not afraid to really dig his hands in the way that I feel like most of the men in that time, most of the gentlemen would not do. So you really have a massive gap between, I don't want to call them peasants anymore because that's not really like what they called them in that time period, but you've got the poor folk, and then which he has tenants. If you know anything about shows that talk about that time, you have these people who are better off or more well-bred, and they have tenants. Not always, but Ross does. So he's in charge of these tenants, and he's like, he even sees like their homes, and he considers them friends. He thinks that they're really good men. They work in his mine. This show is also greatly about mining. I can't believe I haven't mentioned that until now. I mean, there wasn't really that many things you could do back then, but that's really how people made their money. They had a family mine, and let's see, what's the name of the first? I know Will Grace is one of them. I want to say that's W-H-E-A-L. Will Grace, Will. They're all Will something. And so he's like, all these men, they're having trouble with their work and the mind. Their homes are falling home because their landlord isn't here to help them, help take care of them. These are really good, hardworking men. He finds himself having more in common with these men than he does with the upper class that he is expected to, I mean, he's just supposed to be one of them, you know, but he really doesn't, he doesn't like them. So let's see. So he gets his home in order by telling his servants, you know, you're going to start working for me again if you expect to stay here. I want this home immediately. He says, I want this home, you know, spotless. And so they get it back in order, and he's working outside. And there is a scene that is famous. And if you've seen it, if you know, you know. And he's shirtless in the sun. He's like gleaming on, you know, his back, and he's out there working. And I actually found it funny listening to some of his podcast, or, you know, when he's a guest on podcasts and interviews and videos, where he says he really, it just doesn't faze him being like sexualized. Not, he's ambivalent about it. He's like, I just don't care. He's like, I'm not like, oh, like, look at me, I love this attention. But he's like, yeah, it's great. I don't care. I don't mind. Like, it doesn't faze me. And if you see him other times, like not when he's recording, or when he is on a show or filming anything, he's got this big beard and he's almost unrecognizable. But anyways, so he's working really diligently. He goes to, let's see, his cousin gets married, you know, and then he goes to town to, I'm sure, gather supplies. And this is where it really starts to get good to me. This is a pivotal moment in this series. When you go to the market, there's a lot of people out, and he sees a crowd gathering around this little mutt and a larger dog. And there's a girl, and she's... Now, I know what you're thinking. No, she's not a beautiful girl, at least by the way that she, you know, looks at the time. And she's just covered with dirt, and her hair is completely covered up, and she's in rags, and she's crying out, and she's like, look, this is my dog. Please stop. Someone save my dog. Well, him being the character that he is, he has to be the only voice of reason who jumps in and says, you're going to stop this right now. He takes the dog's, he gives it back to the girl, who's clearly very young, and he's like looking at the state of her, and he's like, okay, do you want, come with me. So they go into the tavern, the pub, whatever, and he buys her some food, and her accent is so thick. I don't know if that's what you would call like country poor English accent back then. Like, I don't even know what you would call it, but it's a very thick accent. Meanwhile, you know, Ross speaks very well, and his inflection, you know, when he speaks, is just, you can understand what he's saying. And he sees that she's starving. She just completely gulps the food down, and then he notices her face, and she's clearly been beaten who knows how many times. In the books, she's supposed to be like 13, and in the series, obviously, that was a bit young, so they decided, I think she was supposed to be 15 or 17 or something like that, or maybe, I think they made her 17 in the series when she first started. I also want to take like a quick moment, just a little interlude. Okay, so I also am having to make myself a second cup of coffee. I kind of want the rest of this to be almost like for the people who have already been familiar with this show as well. I wish I could pick your brain. So as you're listening to this, just kind of imagine, you know, as having a discussion, because we need to enter the villain, I guess who you would call the villain. George Warlagan, whom is new money, is what you would call. I feel like you have to kind of discuss him a little bit, and what starts going on with the situation with Demelza, because he is going to come into play, and I believe he was a blacksmith's, I want to say like a grandson or something like that, and his family started a bank business and really social climbed, and I believe Ross kind of picked on him in high school, so he kind of has this like disdain for Ross, but at the same time he looks up to him Of course, he doesn't want anyone to know that, but he obviously desperately wants to be a part of the group. He just wants to be one of, you know, high society, which he is, but I just remember ever since I watched the Titanic, you know, there's a difference in old money and new money. And he is new money. And he kind of controls people because he is trying to become, he really wants a monopoly and he wants to become the only bank in Cornwall, in town. So he can kind of control everyone. Of course, Pasco, the other bank, they're not going to let that happen. That's who Ross is friends with and does business with. But he, George, you love to hate him. I don't want to say, like, hate to love it. Well, yeah, you kind of, like, hate to love him, too. Because the whole time, you're kind of, like, rooting for him. He is really going to be Ross's nemesis through the entire series. Sometimes, you know, there might be, like, a little tiny person who comes up and is in Ross's way. And most of the time in series, you have, like, a new villain in each season. That doesn't happen with this show. It's always coming down somehow to George and all of his estate, everything he owns. That's how he views things, you know. Who he can control, how he can win, again, and pitting it against Ross, and how Ross always comes out the victor. He's not even trying to do anything to win against him. Everything comes to him. People admire him. He can literally do the wrong thing for the right reasons and come out on top. Meanwhile, you've got George doing the right things for the wrong reasons. So anyways, we will, just so you know, I wanted you to know that there is kind of a rival. So let's get back on the meeting with Demelza and Ross. And he sees that she really kind of needs saving in a way. And he asks her, he doesn't even ask, he just tells people, you know, he has that air about him. And he says, "You're going to become my kitchen maid. So come." She's riding home with him, you know, on his horse. And I want to say the sun is setting. Trying to set the scene for you, and he brings her home, and Prudy and her husband just really are not feeling it. Like, they hate the idea of it, and they are trying to get rid of her, and they're like, "Look, as soon as he doesn't need you, and don't worry, we're gonna get rid of you." And she's terrible at baking. She's terrible at pretty much anything. She doesn't know how to do anything. And of course, there comes a part where her brothers try to come, and her father, who, of course, was the one beating her. Consequently, like, he fights these people, his family, her family, off as she is hiding in the cupboards. And she begins to, like, get these feelings for him, and Prudy is like, "Hey, don't be getting any ideas about raising your status." And she's like, "No, I know my place, you know, I'm not." But she also is watching him, and again, just the beautiful scenery. It shows clips of her every day. He makes her become a little cleaner, her wounds heal. She gets angry, she's yelling because he makes her wash every day. It's freezing. It's Cornwall, you know. You're there up north in England, and she's got to wash her hair with cold water outside. And so every day she becomes a little more, I don't want to say learned, but just cleaner. She slowly is easier to understand. She's got a little dog, because she does say, you know, that her Garrick, her dog, I believe that was his name, she will only come if he comes. And he's like, "Absolutely no dog in the house. I'm not gonna have that flea bag in here." The flea ridden dog. But it's cold, so at night she kind of sneaks him in, and they become like this little family. And so then Demelza really does kind of see him out working. She sees him bathing in the ocean, you know, in the sea, and she's hiding, and she's got her hair up. Pause for calls. Let's discuss how Demelza looks so that you can really imagine her. So, as I said, she's young. Back then, you know, young was older. So it really didn't matter that she was like 17, but she, now that she doesn't look a mess, she has got, at least in the show, I believe it's different in the book. She was supposed to, I want to say it was either blonde or brown. I want to say she was blonde, but I could be wrong. She's got this fiery red, curly, long hair that's always just kind of in her way. And sometimes it's down, sometimes she puts it up. And she has got these bluish-green eyes. And she's very pretty. And people eventually become kind of taken with her. Everyone who meets her, really. But George is constantly, you know, referring to her as the kitchen maid, the kitchen wench, as if she is just below his boots, you know, making fun of her. So Prudy's like, don't be getting any ideas. And she starts having feelings, Demelza does, for Ross. And she kind of finds this, like, blue dress that belonged to, I want to say, his mother, puts it on. So she looks like a lady. Of course, she was going through his things. He gets angry at her for doing that. He's like, how... I believe the exact line he says, you would presume to snoop through my things. And after this little, like, tiff that they have, this, like, obvious, I guess, attraction becomes apparent. Well, you can kind of see, actually. It's not a huge surprise. Because when he's taking better care of his tenants, he's working on his, you know, he's working his tail off trying to mend their homes, he's trying to open the mine back up, so that everyone can have income and he can have income and grow these crops and all these things. And he has like little gatherings and all the tenants come, and you've seen it, everyone is just kind of dancing outside, and there's a fire, and eating and enjoying themselves and singing and playing music. And he can see her just having a good time and dancing with everyone, and he'll take these little, steal these glances at her. So it's not that hard to see what's going to happen. So they sleep together. They make love, and the next day, she gets up, she's happy, she's excited, she's gathering flowers, and he's, like, you know, getting up, working, doing his thing, and then he finds her, and she's kind of upset, I want to say, because, like, they haven't really spoken, and then he comes to her, and he says, you know, what's amiss, what's the matter, and she says, well, I just thought that after last night, and he says, what, that you would no longer be my kitchen maid. And she's like, well, at least not, you know, I just want to be here by choice, or maybe, I don't know. I can't remember exactly what she said, but just something like, well, no. And he's like, well, I guess you can't be. And being the noble person that he is, he wants to do right by really himself and her. And by God. So the next scene, it flashes to them getting married in the little church, and she just can't believe how quickly it all happened. She went from being the kitchen maid. You can guess that old Prudy, as they call her, she is not happy about this. So now this, like, little maid, this servant who came in that was supposed to be under her, is now her boss. Is now her master. And it takes her a little bit of time to grow into the idea of that, but she does, because it is impossible not to love Demelza. She forms a respect for Demelza, and over the seasons, you know, Prudy also even changes her appearance, not much, you know, because she is still a servant, but she, at least you can see her face, it's not covered in dirt. So Demelza is the talk of Cornwall, because people are like, I can't believe this has never been done before. Of course, George starts. He's like, how dare he? I can't believe that he takes this kitchen wench and he's trying to bring her into polite society. So, of course, she feels self-conscious. you know, she wants to become a lady. She eventually does. She learns to read, to play music. Her tone, just the way that she speaks, changes. I mean, it happens slowly, but you notice, you're like, wow, like, look at her. She really is learning, you know. She learns how to curtsy, and I'm going to say that Caroline helps her with that, who's a character who doesn't come in until later. And there's a lot of amazing characters in this show, you guys. Dr. Ennis, who was in the Navy, that did not happen in the book, but in the show, he was in the Navy with, I want to say it was the Army, actually. I'm getting it confused, but either way, they were friends, and he is a doctor, which is hard to come by back then, and he shows up in town, he tries to help, and he falls in love with a beautiful blonde heiress who is in love with her dog, and she has a very kind heart, so she seems kind of self-centered, but she's really truly, or self-absorbed, but she is very charitable. They fall in love. They have their own love story because, of course, he's only, even though he's a doctor, he still is not up to the standards that her uncle that she lives with, she's visiting from London, you know, he has plans for her. He's constantly trying to marry her off. Demelza and Ross are become very good friends with them, and it's definitely one of those shows where there's constant drama happening. There's always something going wrong. There's always, like, Ross is, as Demelza calls it, always dodging the noose. And it's really true. And it just amazes me how, and everyone, I think, how he can constantly get into trouble, but somehow he ends up even better, in a higher position because of it. Let's see. So then, back to them, they have their first child, and I'm not going to tell you every detail of what happens if you haven't seen it, and what happens with that child, but I will say that a sickness called the putrid throat happens, and a lot of people are dying from it. George secretly always loves Elizabeth. Elizabeth has had a child with Francis, and there's still this strange connection and love and adoration between Elizabeth and Ross every time they see one another, and it kind of makes you even angry because, of course, Demelza is, like, aware of it, and it hurts her, and she's self-conscious about and nervous about. She has a little bit of trepidation every time they're around one another, thinking, oh, well, he might leave me for her, especially whenever, I'm not going to say how it happens, but something happens to Francis, and she's like, oh, well, you can go be with Elizabeth now, you know, isn't that what you want? And for the people who haven't, you know, seen this series yet, if I can kind of explain the soap aspect of it, you've got Elizabeth, who, once her husband is gone, he dies in a mining accident. You'll have to see that for yourself, the details. But George kind of sweeps in and is like, I've always loved you, Elizabeth. She doesn't love him, obviously. But how do I explain this for the people who haven't seen? I don't want to ruin it. But Ross, I love spoilers. My husband doesn't, but I can't help but give them. Ross visits her because he finds out that George has proposed to Elizabeth. She is so kind of just gentle, and she doesn't know how to do things for herself. So she really needs a man. She needs to be taken care of by a man. So she accepts his marriage proposal. And as soon as Ross finds out, because of the constant just back and forth between him and George, he just can't stand the idea of it. He visits Elizabeth. He demands that she does not marry George. And before all this happens, also, what makes me more, and a lot of fans, upset about what Elizabeth kind of, how she betrays Demelza during the sickness, she tends to Elizabeth and Princess and their child, Geoffrey Charles, catches the sickness. They're all okay. She takes it home to their child, Julia, and her child fall ill, and it results in disaster. So they really are indebted to Demelza. So Ross and Elizabeth finally come together. They make love. And the next morning, she kind of expects him to leave Demelza. And he goes home to Demelza. She knows immediately what happens. If you've seen the scene, you know the scene. She rears back. And he says, I can't explain it. It's something I couldn't control. And she just lays it on him. She just lets him have it. She's hanging clothes on the line. She just hits him and knocks him straight to the ground. So they're dealing with all that. So they have, you know, their problems and everything. But she ends up marrying George anyways because Ross decides he's going to stay with his family. And that's where I say Ross can be a little selfish sometimes, even though he's a very good man. And so it's very complicated. It's definitely a love triangle all of the time. But the thing is, Demelza is right for Ross. And everyone pretty much agrees with that. He needed someone who could get their hands dirty. She's cleaning fish. She's helping tend to, you know, the garden and the chores. And meanwhile, Elizabeth has got her cousin, Verity. Actually, it's not her cousin. It would be, she's a Poldark, I believe. It's Ross's cousin. I want to say Francis's sister. Yes. Verity, who ends up eventually leaving, she's got her own drama, and she's kind of what they consider like an old maid, even though she's not old. But by that time, you're expected at a certain age to have suitors or a proposal or to be married. So she's like, Elizabeth, no, don't tend to that, because she's expected to tend to everything. So Elizabeth is the lady of the house. She's expected to literally do nothing. She's bored to death. So Demelza, she has a very, very strong spirit. She speaks her mind, and she doesn't always just do what she's told. And Ross needs that push and pull. You know, he needs someone who can help him, because they don't live the life that, even though he probably could, there's a lot of times he could, they don't live the life that you know, his uncle and his cousin cousins do. So she's perfect for him. They have an amazing, amazing love, an amazing love story. And he finally tells her, you know, Elizabeth, that was an idealized love. It was young. Now I know for sure that you're the one that I want to be with. This is true. It's flawed. It's not perfect, but it's human, I believe is what he says. And they go on to have more children, and there's war, there's love, there's hate, there's more characters and constant drama, and something is always happening. And it's just a wonderful series, you guys. I can't talk enough about it, and I hope I haven't bored you to death. I hope that somehow I managed to make it sound interesting. And there's also a movie from the 90s. It's got Kelly Riley in it. She's one of my favorite Irish actors. I love her and her red hair. It's not the greatest movie. I mean, you know, today when you go back and you try to watch something like that, and it's just, it's not the greatest. But if you are a fan and you're looking for, maybe you don't know about it, and you're looking for more, you just want more Poldark, then you can go and find that. I want to say it was on Amazon Prime for free. I don't believe that you had to pay for it. Let's see, what else can I think of? Ross also becomes, any details I could leave out that are super important. Ross joins Parliament. He at his, you know, he has disdain for Parliament. He doesn't want to be a part of politics at all. But Demelza convinces him, if you want to help your people and these people who are starving at the hands of George Warleggan, who care nothing about these people, you're gonna have to accept the proposal for you to sit on the bench. And George hates that because he's constantly trying to, you know, marry off people and it's in their family and his wife's family to bar himself to another family that has an important name, which Elizabeth's last name is Chenoweth, and Poldark Chenoweth. Those names are very old names, and that is very important in that time. You know, that makes you important. He wasn't. So Warleggan was not as important of a name. And so anyways, he wants to join Parliament, and he's literally like buying people out, you know, buying people to climb his way into that. So when he finds out that Ross has gotten the spot and not him, he's so angry, and he finds his way in anyways. He buys his way in. And so they're always at odds, wanting the different things for their people and their country and things like that, because he's very selfish. And you see these moments in George where you're like, you come on, you have a little bit of a heart. I can see it. You just want to be accepted, you know, and he just doesn't know how. He feels like he has to have power over everyone, you know, make them fear you, kind of like kings do. You know, much like kings do, they think they'd rather have people fear them, or that they can buy their love, rather than just, they don't know how to earn their respect and love. And Ross just gets it, you know. People really think highly of him. So I would say that in the later seasons, that's a lot of what you are going to see, is him in Parliament. They have more money. And he's really trying to help do what he can. Let's see, what else is there? I want to say, oh, of course, there is the huge, thing about when Elizabeth and Ross come together. They make a child called Valentine. George is not aware that this is not his child. She got pregnant right before, like a month before her and George were married. So it's kind of just agreed upon without being spoken that this is Ross's child to everyone but George. He's not aware of it. And then Elizabeth is constantly trying to convince him that that is his child so that he may be his heir. And poor Geoffrey Charles, he loves his Poldark connections, and he cannot stand his stepfather, and he also just can't stand Geoffrey Charles and tries to get rid of him as much as he can. And Demelza's brothers come in the story and fall in love with Morwenna. I actually just got my bangs cut like hers. So I was pretty excited about that. These are wonderful characters who come into the story. And it did bother me and a lot of people, though, how Ross knows that this is his son, this is his child, and yet he allows this awful person to raise him. He doesn't treat Valentine badly. I will say that Elizabeth kind of is very, very distant with him, as if she has resentment towards this child because she bore Ross's child like she thought she always wanted to, and yet he turned away from her. So she kind of just, she just acts like, ugh, like every time he cries, she doesn't want to hold him. As Valentine gets older, he's a little bit of what you would call a brat, because he's being raised by George and he's spoiled. He gets zero attention, but she decides to become pregnant again to try to keep George thinking that this is his child. She takes something that ensures that she will have this child early, because Valentine came supposedly a month early. They thought he was an early child, and so she wanted that to happen again, and it actually causes her demise. And that's all I'm gonna say about that. And I really, really enjoyed talking about my favorite series in the world. And I hope that you guys will give it a chance. And if you are a Poldark fan and that's what drew you to this podcast or this episode, you know, I'm just imagining you like me. I really love putting on a podcast when I'm in the shower, or reading these books when I'm in the tub, and I will just, I just want to hear other people discussing these, the subject matter that I love and these characters. And sometimes it can be hard to find. If you want an entire podcast about Poldark, there's one called Mining Poldark. There's a few of them. There's a PBS Masterpiece, podcast, and I just really hope you guys give it a chance. And I've had so much fun making this first podcast with you. Thank you for bearing with me. I actually filmed these in my closet because they drown out all the other noise and it has the best acoustics. I also sing, and I like singing in my huge walk-in closet in my bathroom as well. It's a good spot to film these. I plan on doing a lot more each week. I'm going to do one. I'll be thinking about what the subject matter will be for the next episode. I don't want every single episode to be, about the same. I don't want every episode back to back to be about a show or a movie, but I want to, make it interchangeable, to keep things fresh. And I hope that you enjoy, find things that you enjoy like me, and, that you are like-minded people. And just shout out to all of the Ross Poldark and Winston Graham fans, and shout out to all the Jamelza fans. She's amazing. She's just one of my favorite characters out there ever.
So thanks again for listening, and I will talk to you guys next week.